Hello, it is November 11th, 2015. You are looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 537 of the Will Leach Experience on Sports on Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. This is one of my favorite podcasts of the year. It is my big college basketball preview edition podcast with the great Matt Norlander. He's a college basketball writer for CBS Sports, a frequent guest on this podcast, and one of the smartest college basketball people I know. He has his own podcast through CBS with Gary Parrish and Sam Fazzini, which I listen to regularly as well. But as he will mention in this podcast, ordinarily he has to wait for Gary Parrish, who I like very much, to finish talking so he may speak. That is not a problem in this podcast because I just tee him up and let him go. If you want to know what you need to know about college basketball, which begins this Friday on November 13th, this is the podcast for you because Matt Norlander knows everything. Make sure to follow him on Twitter at Matt Norlander, MattNorlander. Also, rate and review us on iTunes. Please do that. Always forget to tell people to do that. Rate and review on iTunes. But mostly, here is Matt Norlander with a whole bunch of college basketball talk. I don't know when the next podcast will be. Probably next week sometime. But dig in, because if you like college basketball and you don't know what to, it's still early enough in the season that you don't know what to pay attention to yet, this is the show for you. Here is Matt Norlander. Mr. Norlander, I'm always happy to talk to you. It is difficult to overstate how happy I am specifically at this moment to talk to you, because my conversation with you, to me, and I'm sure to the rest of America, is a sign, the official sign, that college basketball is beginning.
Well, it is. Seriously, I'm very honored to be back on the podcast. I love coming on here for a couple of reasons. One, because, yes, when we talk on this podcast, it means the season is either about to start or the tournament's about to start. So it's always good vibes and good feelings. Two, I get to talk more on this podcast than I get to on 10 podcasts combined with Parrish. Okay.
Yeah, well, that's
so I enjoy the chance.
Hazard.
I enjoy the chance to gab very much so with that. And three, this allows me a quick piece of PR toward my own podcast that you came on to discuss Nirvana. So be sure to check out the Records and Wrists podcast episode with Will Leach, wherein he basically defames Pearl Jam, professes his love for Nirvana. In all seriousness, it's a very fun episode, and I would highly recommend if you enjoy what Will and I talk about here in terms of basketball. On a musical level, it has taken just so many echelons even higher, and it's a very fun conversation, and so be sure to check that out.
Yeah, there's many good ones on there. I like mine a lot, too, but you had Stephen Hayden, late of Grantland, on there. He was great on there. And can I say that was not, as someone who also listens to CBS's College Football podcast, I was not stunned to hear that Chip Patterson was a Ben Folds 5 fan.
Yeah. That hey, man.
That didn't, I got no beef with Ben Folds 5. I got no beef with him, them, or Mr. Patterson, but that wasn't a shock. But no, it was a very good podcast, and I did not defame Pearl Jam. I just pointed out that Pearl Jam, like, you know, again, as I told you, word for word, a perfectly nice little rock band.
Okay.
The one that everyone should listen to is the Tom Janode one. Tom Janode's, Tom Janode on. That one was a terrific one. So
yeah, that's a really cool one where we kind of talk about modern pop 10. So anyway, yeah, if you enjoy that, thank you for letting me sneak that in there. It's no, just please. It's a fun little side music thing. But let's talk college hoops, man. Where do you want to start?
College hoops. Okay, so I got a few ideas. So I thought what we do is we look at the way that everybody looks at college football anymore, which is they look at like the big five conferences.
Okay.
And then they look at everybody else at the end.
Okay. We now, can definitely do that.
We're going to do six. I've got six.
Oh, see, here's – okay, so it's your podcast. You're setting it up. I am trying to push the movement of getting rid of this whole big five mentality for basketball.
Okay, great, great.
It's really the multi-bid 10, in my opinion.
Okay.
Because you've got the five, and trust me, I'm not going to change your format here, but just in general. Got the Mountain West. You've got the A-10. You've got the Big East. You've got the West Coast Conference, and you've got the American Athletic Conference. Those are the 10. To me, the Missouri Valley, you can't consistently expect that to be a multi-bid league. But whereas all the others, yes, even the West Coast Conference, because Gonzaga is pretty much a guarantee, those are the 10 that are multi-bid leagues. So it's my kind of quiet push. That's maybe fair. In the next few years.
I was going to do six and include the Big East.
Right.
Because it bothers me that people don't pay that close attention to the Big East anymore just because the games are on Fox Sports 1.
Yeah, no, I'm there with you overall in general. I'm right there with you. All right, so let's rock it.
Not that I love defending, Whitlock Coward country over there, but those games do in fact count. So okay, so let's go. Let's just go with our six, and then we'll give, because I want to give about 5 or 10 minutes on each conference, mm-hmm. probably five or 7 minutes on each conference, and then we'll swing back around. So let's do those six. Let's start with the SEC.
Okay.
Let's start with the SEC. I love how, like, one of the things that's fascinating about the SEC is, they clearly seem to have doubled down on the – no, seriously, we're getting serious about basketball. There's the very high-profile coaches in there, lots of new guys in there. My poor Georgia, a team that actually made the tournament last year, and everyone
– Which I predicted a year ago, by the way. Yes. I don't know if you quite remember this.
I also do remember in your tournament podcast preview being like, they shouldn't even be in the tournament. So I also remember that.
I also, by the way, I said Illinois would not make the tournament, and everyone was on Illinois last year. Yeah. So I apologize for this.
That's okay. Obviously you'll have them in this year, or we'll end this.
Those are the only two things I ever get right, but yes.
So obviously Kentucky's at the top. People are up on Vanderbilt. People are up on, obviously, with Simmons and LSU. And people are up on Texas A&M in a lot of ways. Where do you stand? Can anybody challenge Kentucky? And if not, or if so, who are the most intriguing teams in this conference to you?
All right, college basketball listeners checking in with this, wanting an ID on the SEC. Here's how I look at it. Yes, Kentucky is clearly the best team. Yes, yet again. Real quick on Kentucky. They've got two freshmen, in my opinion, that will be one and dones for sure. One is Scott Labissiere. He is a 6'10 power forward / center type. When you watch him play, you will immediately see that he has a skill set and body type that should be in the NBA right now. I don't know, production-wise, what to expect from him. Is he going to do what Towns did last year? Towns was a force, but his numbers, they weren't overwhelming because of what Calipari was running. That's not going to happen again this year. The other guy, the guy that I think will contend with Ben Simmons at LSU for freshman of the year, and I think he actually might take it from Simmons because Kentucky is going to have a better season than LSU, is Jamal Murray. Jamal Murray is out of Canada. He is a guard, small forward, kind of combo-ish guy who can also handle the ball. I think he is ready to be a stud right out of the gate. They've got a lot there. Tyler Ulis is the sophomore point guard. He's the leader. Overall, don't expect Kentucky to lose more than 5 games at most. They aren't going to make a charge for 40-0 like last year, although I really fought back. That was one thing where I was way wrong, as I fought back on this whole, like, Kentucky's going to run the table kind of deal. I kind of hate that talk in general before we get to February. It's one of my pet peeves. But to everyone that called it, props to them because they very well nearly did it.
Yeah, but they didn't. They didn't, so you're still right.
I know they didn't, but they got the 38-1, man. Like, it's kind of ridiculous that happened. And it's also ridiculous that we've had two straight seasons where we've had a team enter the NCAA tournament without a loss. Yeah. That's not going to happen a third straight year. If it does, I guess break out the think pieces, because that's just, in this day and age, I think it's ridiculous that we've even had one, let alone two in a row. So yeah, Kentucky will be good again. Alex Poythress comes back from a knee injury. Poythress is a guy who has a freshman people thought could be a one and done kind of player. Now he's a season vet, a senior guy. They'll be really good. I think they're going to be a number one or number two seed. Below them, Georgia is going to get back to the tournament. LSU is, here's my thing with LSU. I mentioned Simmons. He is so much fun to watch play. I've seen him in person plenty. You're going to get some LeBron James. In fact, I think Goodman put up a comparison thing on ESPN.com, Jeff Goodman, and I think he dropped LeBron. I have not read the piece yet, but he tweeted out something that indicated to me that someone was giving him grief over that. He's not LeBron-like other than the fact that Simmons is like 6'9", 6'10", can run the floor and pass beautifully. He is so much fun to watch play, but here's my beef with LSU. They have no one in the non-conference. Their best team that they play is Marquette. That's just absolutely brutal for a guy that's the best freshman in the country, certainly the number one ranked recruit. It kind of sucks that you're not going to have any sort of game that you're going to need to watch him against a legitimate team until well after New Year. That's a bad job by Johnny Jones and LSU for scheduling. Nonetheless, Simmons will probably put up ridiculous numbers for LSU against all these patsies, and he'll get out in front in the freshman of the year race. Texas A&M is going to be a tournament team. This is a program, in my opinion, that is just killing it. I mean, recruiting wise, it's kind of amazing how good that they've become on the recruiting trail. Now, they have made additions to their staff that would that would help that overall. But this is Billy Kennedy is their coach. And, you know, 2-3 years ago, he was getting a lot of negative recruiting because, yes, because, you know, onset Parkinson's and all of this stuff. But now they come back really strong. They got a guy named Daniel House, who's a fantastic, fantastic player. Will maybe flirt with being a first team SEC guy there. Overall, they play both offense and defense pretty well. I like what they have. I understand that Texas A&M isn't a sexy college basketball team. Like, you don't look at that program, aside from when Gillespie was there and they had DeAndre Jordan and all this stuff. Like, you don't necessarily think, yeah, that's a really interesting team. I want to see them play. It's almost because they got this, you know, huge football presence to them. And since AC Law was, you know, running game there and all that stuff. But I'm telling you, they're going to be fun this year. They play Texas at the end of November. And that I think, in my opinion, is one of the best games in one of those tournament type deals they play in the Bahamas. So I would go Kentucky, and then I would go Vandy. I know I haven't gotten to Vandy, and I guess with Vandy, I'm a little hesitant to get as high on them as a lot of people. I could put them second, but I won't. Maybe third or fourth. Listen, they've got a big man in the middle, Damian Jones. He's going to be an NBA pick. They've got other really good guys like Wade Baldwin. He's going to be a sophomore. Riley LeChance is going to be a sophomore. Matthew Fisher Davis is going to be a sophomore. These are all really solid players, and I think they're going to have a good year. I just think they're going to have an inconsistent year. I think they're going to lose a few games that they shouldn't. Just a sense of what I get with their personnel and kind of what the program has been. SEC will be good. Should get about five teams to the tournament. Let's say Kentucky. I really do think I'm going to go A&M 2. I'm that big on them. Vandy 3, LSU 4, Georgia 5. That's probably going to be it. South Carolina might be that.
What do we need to know about Florida and the new coach?
Okay. Not too much for this year. Listen, in my opinion, Mike White is the new coach. He's their next Billy Donovan. I think he'll be there more than 10 years unless they get so good to where he goes to a top 10 job. Because in my opinion, Florida's not a top 10 job. It's like a top 20 job. But they're going to be just okay. Casey Hill should be pretty good. But I don't expect them. Remember, this is a team last year that was probably the most surprisingly underachieving team. I was kind of down on them from after I saw with the way they played against Carolina and Kansas, and those were good teams, don't get me wrong, but they didn't start well at all, and then they just did not have an ability to close out games. And just, I mean, they lost a lot of close ones, but they were 16-17 last year. I would expect something similar. I don't think they're going to win 20 games. Maybe finish 7th or 8th in the league, not necessarily sniff a bit.
Alright, and I'd like to one last note. Missouri, I think, might be the worst team in all of major college basketball this year.
People are saying that. I know. I'm actually saying Alabama will be worse.
Yeah. I feel like Avery Johnson is not the right call there.
I, generally speaking, agree with that. To me, it's a little weird. It might work. We'll see. But I don't know if I said it on a podcast or if I wrote it. I just can't keep track of all this stuff. But it's my guess that by 2018, Avery Johnson is not at Alabama. That's just my guess.
One way or the other. All right, let's go to the Big East. I'm going by KenPom rankings. That's why I put SEC below Big East. Let's go with the Big East 5. The get ready for mini Colin Coward promos on all of the games that you watch on the Big East. Maybe he'll talk about Missouri. That'll be fun. So let's when you look at the SEC, they seem to have the player of the year in Chris Dunn for Providence, but Providence is not one of the better teams. Is this still a Villanova conference?
Yeah, it is. The Big East. All right, let's talk teams that I think have a chance. I'll do a quick rundown. I would say I'll go Villanova 1, Georgetown 2, Xavier 3, Butler 4, Providence 5, draw a line. I think those five teams will get in the tournament. Providence at 5, Chris Dunn is so good. And, you know, I wrote a profile on him. I went out and saw him. Basically, they lose a lot of what made them good last year, but they bring back the most important piece. And the fact that Chris Dunn is even playing college basketball still is kind of amazing, because he almost definitely would have been a lottery pick. This doesn't normally happen. He is so good defensively. And for people that don't watch a lot of Providence, and maybe you'll have only seen Chris Dunn literally that listen to his podcast. They've seen him play once, maybe twice. He is a complete all around game, yet he has this amazing blend of humility about him, where he is clearly this good at the college level. It's pretty remarkable how good he has become and how he's beaten injuries, but he has a self-awareness about him that I almost found unnatural in talking to him about how he did not consider himself nearly mature enough for the NBA. And it's like, it's almost like a catch-22 reverse style. Like, if you're this aware of how not mature you are, then you're mature enough for the NBA. I think he will be good enough. Providence is going to be a lot of fun, people, because they're going to get up and down the floor because Dunn is so amazing in the open court. Ed Cooley is going to make this team go up and down, up and down, up and down, which you'll see more teams do in general because we've got a lot of rule changes coming to college basketball this season, which should help the sport long term, but might make it a little inconsistent this year in terms of fouls called. Butler, I have at 4. I think they're a little overrated by everyone. I think they're going to be about a double-digit seed, call them a 10 seed. They're going to be solid. Roosevelt Jones is a great player. Kellen Dunham is a great player for the Butler level. Both of those guys, you know, we have them in our top 101 players on CBSSports.com. I just think Xavier will be better because I like Xavier's talent across the board overall even more. I think Chris Mack does a good job. He's also among the most self-deprecating and most social media aware coaches out there. So, you know, almost no coaches are even worth following on Twitter, but Chris Mack is, because he's like not afraid to say the Bengals are good when they're good and not when they're not and all that kind of stuff. So I guess I have a little bit of a bias there, although he loves Kid Rock and I'm calling him out on this because it's ridiculous. He's been to like 10 Kid Rock concerts. It's kind of a joke, to be honest. Jalen Reynolds is their big player. Xavier, I think he'll be their most important player, but Trayvon Blewett, who will be a sophomore this year, should also have a pretty standout year. Georgetown has Devontae Smith Rivera, who is, you know, one of those guys where people that follow the sport feel like he's been there forever. He means a lot. I think he's the second most important player in the conference to Dunn. But they also have a guy named Isaac Copeland, who I think is going to have a breakout year. Overall, I think Georgetown is being slept on. Maybe that's because they haven't been super great in the tournament for most of the past decade. I'm not quite sure what it is. But in my opinion, Georgetown is going to set itself up to get something along the lines of a 5 seed or better this season, just like, by the way, they did last season. I don't think people realize, you know, won 22 games, went 12-6 in the league, you know, beat Indiana last season, and they were the trendy upset pick in the tournament to Eastern Washington, which they won, and then they lost out to a Utah team that had a couple of future pros on it. So, to me, Georgetown is number two with a bullet, and then Villanova is a team that I actually... Are we going to do Final Four stuff at the end of this or not? Can I just tell you?
Yeah, no, okay. Just mark it to yourself.
Marking it to myself.
As
okay,
a potential Final Four team, but we'll see at the end of the
podcast. That's right. Okay, so Villanova is certainly in the picture there. I'm almost ready to go on a season-long rampage with how undervalued Villanova was last year. Went 33-3 because they dropped to NC State, a three-point game in the round of 32. Even more, and because of the league affiliation, people downgrade the Big East. Like, a lot of it's just bullcrap. I'm sorry. They were amazing last year, and they're probably going to be better this year because they got a freshman named Jalen Brunson who plays. He can play combo. He can play lead guard, point guard, however you want to describe it. Between him and Ryan Arcidiacono, who actually shared Player of the Year with Chris Dunn in the league last year, Villanova brings everyone back except they lose Dylan Ennis to Oregon, and they lost Darren Hilliard up front. But Ochefu's back. Josh Hart is a terrific combo wing. Phil Booth is going to be solid. They've got a lot there. I think they're going to be, if not as good, just a little bit less. But right there, I think they're stellar. I can't say enough good things about Villanova because they do things so well on both ends of the floor. And just Jalen Brunson. I'm telling you right now, he's off the radar for people that don't really follow recruiting and aren't that. I'm telling you, when we get to January and people are like, wow, what this Jalen Brunson kid, I'm telling you, he's going to be one of like the 6 or 7 biggest impact freshmen in the country.
We Illinois fans know Jalen Brunson because he's another Chicago kid who wins the finals. All right, so we won't get into speaking of – we don't need to talk about DePaul. I don't want to talk about that St. John's just because I want to be happy for Chris Mullin and not think about them losing a exhibition game.
Real quick, here, St. John's, it's going to take a while. DePaul actually should be a little bit better. Seton Hall is probably going to have a new coach at the end of the season. Creighton, I think, is going to be better than people think. And Marquette has a kid named Henry Ellenson who could be a one-and-done type kid. Some people have called him Baby Dirk, which is unfair, but that's what people have called him. I wrote an article on him a couple summers ago. They'll be good. I just don't think they'll be consistent enough to legitimately vie for a bid. I think we'll have a little bit of an AAC thing going on in the Big East where I think you're going to get to Providence, and then there's going to be a bottom half. I think the line between Marquette and Providence will be something of a pronounced line, and so you'll have a top half and a bottom half there.
All right, next we go up. We go to the Pac-12. Accordingly for the Pac-12. Certainly, you know, this is a team. If people were so high on Arizona last year, they made the Elite Eight and so on. But this doesn't seem like so much a top-heavy conference as much as it seems. It's like just a lot of really good teams. No real horrible teams, maybe except outside of the state of Washington anyway. But on the whole, top to bottom, I don't know. Are they roughly similar? It seems like they've got a lot of top 100 teams.
To me, for a college basketball diehard, the Pac-12 is the most interesting league this season. And here's why. Yeah, oddly, Washington State typically is bad, but Washington is usually never quite this down, but they should be down. So you might have had a situation there where Washington, even though it's had some recruiting victories, Romar might be gone after 14 years there. Stanford is going to be an interesting situation because Dawkins was on the hot seat for a long time, but he's done well in recent years. But who knows how good Stanford's going to be this year. And so Stanford has a season where, you know, it loses to Villanova in the non-conference. It loses to Texas. It loses to SMU. And then it doesn't get above 500 in the league. I think Dawkins is deserving of another year. And I didn't put him – I hate doing those hot seat lists, but I had to do one for us. And I didn't put him on that. But I could see a situation where he does end up getting the boot from Stanford, depending on which candidates might be open. So just keep an eye on that. Arizona State gets a Hurley brother. And it's going to be very interesting to see what Bobby does there because – I think he'll find success, but I talked to a couple of people in the coaching business, and basically the way that they were kind of saying this in a frank way. And I don't think they're trying to slam or anything, but you know, the Hurleys, both him and Danny at Rhode Island, they are geriatric and they go after officials. They ride them in like big time, and they're like, that's not going to fly. What he did at Buffalo is just not going to fly in the Pac-12. Yeah. So I'll be interested to see how he might change his ways or maybe not. But Arizona State, give them a couple years, but they will be fun for sure. USC, I don't think will make the tournament, but this is a very much a prove it year for Andy Enfield, who was, you know, the trendy hire. He was at Gulf Coast, Dunk City.
Because of two wins.
It's silly and stupid, and that's how it can work for some ADs. He gets two wins as a 15 seed, and really, though, you know, I maintain 20 years from now, Florida Gulf Coast will still be one of the most memorable upset runs that we have just because it was a 15 seed doing it and they looked like a freaking 2 seed when they were just thrown down at people.
I was in Philly. It was so great.
Nice. That is awesome. Yeah, I actually covered their loss. But even in the build up to that, it was a lot of fun. But anyway, Enfield has averaged 11.5 wins the past two seasons. To me, it's not a hot seat situation. I think, you know, if they show growth again and win 13, 14, 15, then he'll get another year. But people are expecting USC to be better this season, and I think they will be, but I don't think they flirt with a berth. The interesting stuff is this. Oregon State is going to make the tournament, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have it in front of me, Will. I don't think they've made the tournament since 91. It's something like that. If they're not necessarily a trendy pick, but I'm just telling you, they have the personnel. Wayne Tinkle, the funniest name in all of college basketball coaching. They play great defense, and they're going to score more this year. They have Gary Payton's son, the Mitten, is on the team. He is a senior and is really a very stellar player. He's kind of the star, the guy that people kind of know, and they do it sort of by committee. But I'm just telling you, don't be shocked. Oregon State, 12 seed, I think they're going to have a really good chance at this, and I think their schedule is going to set them up for that, because I think they've got winnable games against, like, they get Iona, they get Valpo. Those are both home games, and Iona and Valpo should be the best teams in their league. So I think that they'll reflect well if they can win those. And then they get Tulsa in late December, and Tulsa's a team that I think will contend for a bid. So ultimately, I think Oregon State's going to sneak in because they're going to have enough close wins and steal some in league play. So that's kind of the be on the watch for. I know they're always way off the radar, but they should be better this year. Arizona, they're not the best team in the conference, in my opinion. I would go Cal 1, Arizona 2, Oregon 3, Utah 4, UCLA 5. I think that's how I'd rank it. Cal has a freshman named Jaylen Brown. Cal is going to be a lot of fun. I might be part of the fraternity that overranks them, like to the point where, like, I think Cal will win the league and get a number 2 or number 3 seed at worst. I think they're going to be that good. Wow. Jaylen Brown, man, he's just a stud.
I mean, they didn't even make the CBI last year.
There is certainly legitimacy to people that want to push back on us ranking Cal so high. Cal on KenPom barely cracks the top 50. And they were a little soft last year. No doubt about it. Jabari Bird didn't play nearly as well as he should have. But Tyrone Wallace is a guy that's going to average 14 points, 8 rebounds, and 6.5 assists. I think he's going to be a first-team All-Pac-12 guy. Jordan Matthews should have a huge year. And then you got Brown. Ivan Rabb is a pretty good freshman. I just like what they have overall. In Arizona, they lost out on a freshman, Will, named Ray Smith. He tore another ACL. He was going to be kind of a big factor. And, you know, sometimes, unless it's like an absolute guaranteed superstar stud, one injury doesn't necessarily flip your fortunes whether you win a league or not. But Smith, and then on top of that, you know, you lose TJ McConnell, who I cannot believe is balling in the league right now. Like, that's just amazing to me that he alone made the NBA and is like, it's just really awesome. But they lose him, and they lose Hollis Jefferson and Brandon Ashley. And Stanley Johnson. Like, so there's enough that they lost there that I'm not convinced, even though they've got, you know, Alonzo Trier as an incoming lead guard who should be pretty good. Ryan Anderson, formerly at Boston College, I think he's gonna have a huge year. And Sean Miller, don't doubt Sean Miller, but just I'll put him down as a soft number 2. I know I'm rambling here, but real quick, Oregon is going to be a lot of fun. And they got a freshman named Tyler Dorsey who's probably going to have a huge year. They lose Joe Young, but they've got enough there through ways of transfers and guys coming back that Dana Altman, who some argue shouldn't even be coaching there given the rape allegations that happened. Regardless of that, the dude is just accumulated hundreds and hundreds of wins in his career, and the personnel they have this year, it would be surprising to me if Oregon doesn't win close to 25 games again.
Okay. Oregon State last made the tournament, by the way, to answer that question, in 1990, and they last won a tournament game in 1982 under Ralph.
Amazing.
So does that speak well to Craig Robinson, by the way?
No. Got 6 years there, though. That's kind of my... my bar there is if you get 6 years is really 2 full recruiting cycles. And if you can't get to the NCAA tournament in that time, you don't really deserve a 7th year in the modern age.
Yeah. Poor guy. It seems very nice man. Okay, let's go to the Big 12. Really only one question on this. Is anyone going to unseat Kansas ever?
And at this point in the program, this is when you pause this podcast. Go back to the feed from a year ago when Will asks me the exact same
question. I mean, come on, I've given up my – it's funny. I for about 4 years, my father and I, big Illinois basketball fans, were sore at Bill Self for leaving. We all understood why he left. It made sense for him to leave, but we were still sad about it. Now we've actually come full circle and be like, okay, Bill Self is just so awesome. Why can't we get anyone even half as good as Bill Self? Like, at this point, what he's doing there, it almost – because they've only won one title, it's almost not appreciated enough, but it's really amazing what they do every year.
Yeah, it's almost like this weird, like, Nicholas won 18 and finished second 19 times kind of golf thing. Like, that's the finishing second in 19 majors is stupid. Like, the fact that Kansas has done this where it's 11 straight conference titles, outright or a share of them. I think I've said it on this podcast. I know I've said it before. I don't think we will see this duplicated at any level in any conference, with maybe the exception of Gonzaga, ever again. Okay? You don't have schools go more than a decade in the regular season finishing out at the top of the league. This just doesn't happen. There has to be a year of regression. And yet Kansas has dodged this. It is absolutely unbelievable. So I have a few rules. One, I refuse to pick Gonzaga to make a Final Four until they prove to me they can get there. I refuse to pick Kansas below first in the Big 12 until they prove that they won't do it. So, yeah, I have them again. There's a guy named Chick Diallo who is a really talented big man, maybe a little less of a Joel Embiid type, I guess, down low. Certainly more physical than Embiid was. He hasn't been cleared yet. We're waiting on that. It's a major eligibility case. Even without him, Kansas has enough there. Perry Ellis, Frank Mason, Wayne Selden. They've got a great guard who's going to get drafted named Svi Mykhailiuk. Okay, that's pretty much how you pronounce it. He is probably going to have a breakout year. And the top of the Big 12 is super interesting because Oklahoma and Iowa State will challenge. I think Oklahoma has a better chance of unseating Kansas than Iowa State, but Iowa State, they're all Final Four contenders. But I would have Kansas at the top. Oklahoma State has Buddy Hield, my pick for player of the year, actually, because I think Oklahoma is, if I had to predict right now, mark me down for Oklahoma to finish one game back of Kansas in the Big 12, but still to have the right of like a number two seed and for Hield to have the overall numbers. Like, I think Heald's going to average 19, 8, and 6 and more than a steal and a block in a game. He's my pick. There's a lot of variance, and that's what makes this year interesting, Will, is that in terms of national champion picks, player of the year picks, you see a wider pool of candidates this year than we have in many previous years. So Heald's my pick. Iowa State has plenty still. You know, they lose Hoiberg to the Bulls, and so some people wonder if Steve Prohm is going to get the job done there and how he will do with this team. It's unusual that you inherit a team as a coach that's capable of going to a Final Four and has a roster. Monty Morris is crazy underrated. He might be more important to that team than George Niang, who appears on more preseason All-American lists. Jameel McKay down low is a really good player. They get Deontay Burton, Marquette transfer, at the semester break. So that's that kind of a top three. I don't think you could find anyone to argue. If you wanted to go with the ACC, you've got a little bit of something there. But top of the league, top three teams, Big 12 might be number one overall. Below that, Baylor is probably four. Torian Prince is a guy that I know people don't really know too much about, but just know that he could get picked in next year's draft. Torian Prince, keep an eye on it. Rico Gathers is the team's best big man and could lead the nation in rebounding. He'll certainly be top five. I would be shocked if that didn't come to be. Baylor should make the tournament. Texas and West Virginia are the other two. Oklahoma State, Kansas State, TCU, Texas Tech, knock them all out. They probably won't do much this year. Texas has Shaka Smart now, of course. They're going to be a lot of fun to watch. I think they're going to have Isaiah Taylor's their best player, and he's their lead guard and point guard and can kind of score. Sometimes I don't love his shot selection, but they've got a lot of guys there that I like Texas to finish fifth, West Virginia sixth. I don't know if West Virginia will make it. They'll come close, though. But Shaka Smart at Texas is going to be a lot of fun. Cameron Ridley's still there. Kendall Yancey and DeMarcus Holland are absolutely going to thrive on the defensive end. That team is going to be a lot of fun. And they open up. They're in China right now. So when the season starts on Friday, they play against Washington. I would think that's going to be, unless, you know, these bizarre travel location. Like, I think Texas will beat Washington by 15 points. I would expect a rout there. So they're going to be a lot of fun. And, you know, this – everyone was finally waiting for Shaka to take a job. And when he do it, it was like 4 years of that kind of stuff. And he finally takes what coaches in the profession consider to be Texas is a top five job, all things considered.
Yeah, it's always annoying when Texas actually picks someone really good. You hope they, with all their advantages, they'll screw it up, and they won't. My last question on the Big 12.
Yes.
Does Bruce Weber make it into next year?
I don't think he does, but that's just my forecast because he's kind of blown up the whole thing. Mm-hmm. They had some roster issues, and so he's starting from scratch and hoping that they can win enough to get him another year. I just don't think Kansas State will win. Real quick. I said I'm looking at their non-con. They could lose at home to Columbia. They could lose at home to Columbia.
Yeah,
okay.
There's the first problem.
I wouldn't be shocked if they lost to Missouri, honestly. I mean, that's kind of a coin flip game in my opinion. They've got enough in the non-con, I guess.
They got at Georgia. They have at Georgia. That's another game.
They'll lose. Lose at A&M, Texas A&M. That is. They got Ole Miss. They could get to double-digit wins, but even still, that might not save. I was going to say, I wonder if they'll get to double-digit wins, but I think they'll have just enough to get there. I don't think they'll win more than 12 games, wow, and I think they'll start over. I could be wrong, though. I was really aggressive in terms of evaluating what Weber's done, and overall, it hasn't been a disaster, but it's one of the things where the record is a little misleading because he's gone from 27 to 20 to 15 wins. You know, you don't want that. That's kind of the inverse, and you know, from a 4 seed to a 9 seed to not in the tournament, you're not going in the right direction, and there's not a lot of momentum there, recruiting wise. Morale-wise, right. I'm not seeing that. I could be wrong. Listen, coaches have stayed on for much worse. But if I had to guess, I'll say Weber is not there.
Poor guy. I do. I say that I have love. I know
you love Weber.
Yeah,
and,
I'm glad he's not coaching Illinois anymore, but I have nothing but good thoughts about that man. All right, so we go to the second best conference, not according to KenPom, but according to the ACC Big Ten Challenge, in which this conference has not won since 2008. So just pointing that out, this conference has not, in fact, won the ACC Big Ten Challenge since 2008. I don't know what happened before then. I don't remember. I'm not here to legislate the past. I'm just pointing out that the ACC has not won the Big Ten ACC Challenge since 2008. Therefore, they're number two. Let's look at the ACC. Is this – it's weird because, you know, I'm as I'm talking to you, I've got my blue ribbon here, and I also have my KenPom open. It's – KenPom is kind of – famously, I mean, he's got North Carolina 7, but there seems to be this consensus everywhere else that North Carolina is the best team in the country. Are they, or are they even the best team in this conference?
I am very hypocritical when it comes to Carolina this year because I have Virginia winning the league. I right now see they don't have Marcus Paige, their best player, their point guard, to start the year. He's got a foot injury and he'll be out for the next 3 weeks at least. So I, without Paige, in my opinion, Carolina is not a top seven team in the country. When you look at, they bring back pretty much everyone. They only lost JP Tokoto to the draft, but otherwise the whole team's back. And so Carolina was almost slotted as a preseason number one, or number two or number three, because by the mere fact that it's Carolina, they brought all these guys back. And so why wouldn't we have them ranked that high? I have seen this personnel not play up to its talent to the point where I almost am like, well, maybe the talent's just not there. And this is all relative, by the way. I'm not saying Carolina's not a top 20 team. I'm saying this Carolina roster, as I see it now, I just am not sold on the fact that it is somehow the best team in the ACC, deserving of a top five spot. Okay. But where I'm hypocritical is then I look at the rest of like the top 10 or so, and I say, man, it's tough not to say that. But overall, I don't know if you kind of get what I'm saying here. I'm just not wowed by them. Like, I feel that they should be better, and maybe that comes to be. Maybe it doesn't. Remember, they do have, and I don't know how much this will affect the players or whatever, but they have this –
they've got
looming,
a sword. They've got a sword hanging over their neck.
They do, and I will say, you know, this whole NCAA academic fraud investigation thing, I am on the record as saying that the word will not come down until after the season for many factors. One of them, the pragmatic and logistical timeline of things that I just don't think that it's going to wrap up in time. Cynics will say, well, yeah, of course it won't. It's Carolina. They're going to be good. Why would the NCAA do that to themselves? You know, all that stuff. I can kind of see where people would be arriving at that kind of criticism, but I don't know if it's totally based in all sorts of reality. But welcome cynicism when it comes to stuff with NCAA, and sometimes it is validated and warranted. I have Virginia as the best team in the league, just a little bit over North Carolina, because Tony Bennett is a magician, man. I know people don't love what Virginia does, and there was a lot of happiness when Michigan State beat Virginia last season. Virginia had a little bit of a Villanova thing, by the way. Those two teams play each other on December 19th. That's going to be an amazing game, for College Hoops diehards at least. But they lose Justin Anderson and Darian Atkins, bring back everyone else. I think they're going to be awesome again. They were the best team on defense in the country last year. Mark me down. Virginia, then Carolina, then Duke, reigning champs. They have a lot of fresh faces because they lose Jahlil Okafor, Justice Winslow, who predictably is fitting in just fine at the NBA level with the Heat right now, and Tyus Jones, Final Four MOP. Brandon Ingram is the stud they bring in. Ingram, by the way, is on the record as saying he would have probably picked Carolina if the NCAA stuff wasn't happening. So that's a knife twisting in the side of Carolina fans. I think Ingram will be really solid. Chase Jeter is a guy down low who will probably see his minutes somewhat limited, should be better as the year goes on. Luke Kennard, a solid shooting wing. Derek Thornton takes over at the point for Tyus Jones. He's a different kind of point guard. Shoots it more athletic, not as heady. It's going to be pretty intriguing to see what Duke is, because they're not going to be as good as they were last year. They're not going to be as varied, but they do have, you know, Matt Jones is a veteran. Emile Jefferson is a veteran. Like, I expect inconsistency from Duke in the realm that, like, I think they will lose to Kentucky. All right, let me bring up their schedule real quick here. Okay, so they get Tana and Bryant to win this. I think they'll lose to Kentucky. I think they will beat, but maybe have a little more trouble with VCU than they should. We'll beat Yale, and then they can lose to Indiana December 2nd. They can lose that game, okay? It wouldn't shock me if they did. So what I'm getting at here, they still have Utah. They might you might have a situation where Duke really flirts with hopping out of the polls early, but I think they'll be Duke, and they'll form at the end of as they get into league play and solidify themselves as a number four seed at worst. I would kind of cement them as the third best team in the conference. They're not going to be what they were last year. They don't have anyone like Okafor, all that stuff. But it will be pretty interesting overall. Miami might be your fourth best team in the ACC this season. They're the trendy pick for top four, top five status with all that they have and all that's coming back. I like them. I don't love them. Personally, I think NC State will be the fourth best team. I'm big on what NC State's doing right now. Gottfried has done a better job than I ever thought he would. So I'd go NC State 4. Miami 5. Sheldon McClellan's a great player. Angel Rodriguez, if you can handle the ball better, Miami should be more reliable. But these are all, these are all tournament teams. 6, I'd say Notre Dame, which will still be good. Demetrius Jackson is awesome. He's just a bulldog of a guard for that team. I expect him to do it. Zach Huggins had a huge breakout postseason last year. Go Notre Dame 6. Man, after that, I would say Pitt 7, Louisville 8, Syracuse 9. It gets real murky there. Florida State's still in there. That's 10. I mean, those are 10 teams, Will, that all should have a decent shot at reaching the tournament. I don't think the ACC will send 10. I think 9 is a possibility. Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech, BC, and Wake will not be, and Clemson won't be in the picture. Wake will probably be the best of those. And Wake fans are still kind of reeling because they thought they might have had a chance to land Harry Giles, who chose Duke. That was never going to happen. But he's kind of has connections to that area, so that's why they were kind of in on him. But yeah, that's kind of my rambling overview of the ACC. It's going to be super interesting and intriguing. To me, the conference is too big for its own good. It's like the old Big East, which had, you know, there were benefits to having that huge of a league, and you get that many teams in the tournament, and you can have a lot of high-profile games because you get more teams in the top 25 and all that stuff. But it can become a cluster, man, and I almost think that sometimes these, you know, it's just pure math when the committee's looking at all these teams and you've got these games and you win this against this team and lose it against that team. I think it can sometimes backfire a little bit, but I would say Virginia, Carolina, Duke, draw a line. NC State, Miami, Notre Dame, draw a line. Pitt, Syracuse, Louisville, Florida State, draw a line, and then the rest.
And at this point, I remind everyone, because no one's remembered this since April, Grayson Allen looks like a young Ted Cruz. Yeah, forget that. Everyone forgot that.
So you asked me last year about that whole, the guy, remember you asked me like the white guy that people would hate.
Yeah.
I can't remember who I said.
I said it was the guy from Iowa.
You did, and I thought I said someone else. Someone else who listens is going to remember it. But this year, it's clearly Grayson Allen, obviously. Because he plays for Duke. He's got a little bit of that face. He's got some arrogance to him. He's good, by the way. He's gonna almost surely be an NBA pick at some point. And so because of all of that, So long as Grayson Allen, his name is Grayson Allen. I mean, honestly, it's all just a perfect combination.
And he looks like a young Ted Cruz. Let's not forget. All right, now we go to the greatest conference in the land, the only conference that really matters. The place heading to Washington, D.C. for its tournament, not this year, but next year, much to the frustration of my father, who loves to go to the Big Ten tournament in Indianapolis every year. It is the Big Ten Conference. We'll obviously spend an hour talking about Illinois. Hmm. But first, here's my real question. About two main questions of the league. One, is Maryland legitimate national championship contender everyone wants them to be? And two, is this the year that Wisconsin finally finishes out of the top four?
Wisconsin first. I do think it is. That should be the third pillar to my don't do it until they prove it. And that's don't pick Wisconsin outside the top four until they prove they won't do it with Bo Ryan. Because every year, no matter what, Wisconsin is top four in the Big Ten. It's kind of amazing. But I do think that they will finish fifth overall. Just the conference is so good and Wisconsin loses so much where they're still going to be in the tournament. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But I can't – and watch them do it, man. Watch them like finish third. It's going to be stupid.
Yeah, it is last year.
Well, we'll see.
If he'd have won, do you think he would have retired if they'd have won that game last year? That would have been awesome if he retired.
It would have been awesome. I don't know if he would have. Yeah. I don't know. And even like he is when that whole thing came out with Bo Ryan's, like, this is gonna be my last year. The way that it was worded, I remember us like getting the story up, and I think I wrote the headline on it. I was like, this isn't like definite. I can tell with the way it's been written. And even since then, Bo's like, it's not guaranteed. So we'll see how this year plays out. I'd like Bo Ryan to stick around as long as possible. I know Big Ten fans might not feel the same for certain reasons, but Maryland title contender, yes. Although Deion Wiley, he's not like one of the five most important players on the roster, but he's one of the seven or eight most important players on the roster. As we've been recording this podcast, it was reported that he tore his right meniscus, and so he's had surgery, and he's done for the year pretty much. He could ultimately, I don't know if this decision has been made, and if, you know, by the time we're done this and the podcast is live, Maryland has a certain press release that's out that has updated information. He could technically, you know, kind of choose to stay eligible. If Maryland's good and he's ready by the end of February, try and play into it. I don't expect that to happen, though. But even with the Wiley injury, Maryland is a team that I think has a legitimate shot. I think some people are hesitant. I guess I kind of get it. I mean, this team did win 28 games last year, though, and it brings back everybody. Has a really solid front court between Jake Layman, Robert Carter, Georgia Tech transfer, Diamond Stone, the terrific five-star center out of Wisconsin who will probably be a really, really good player in March, but you're not going to see it in November necessarily. Then obviously Melo Trimble is interesting because he's not a point guard. He's like a lead guard, and there's a difference because a lead guard is more – you're not always expected to necessarily distribute the ball. You're just expected to bring the ball up and help run the show. I wonder if we haven't elevated Trimble just a little too much here because Des Wells did a lot for that team last year, okay? And he also had Wiley's help, and he's not going to have that. Granted, he will have – plenty of help around him. You know, Jared Nickens is a solid wing. He'll be there. Rashid Suleiman, Duke transfer, 1 year grad transfer. I think it's going to thrive personally, but I do wonder if we're going to have like if Trimble's just going to be good, not great. And then a little bit of backlash is going to come. Overall, I like what they have though. I think that they are the best team in the league and they're set up for a very good season. I do think that they will have a number one seed because I think they're going to win the league. And if you win the Big Ten, almost surely you're going to have a number one seed.
All right. So it feels like just it wasn't that long ago that Tom Crean was under attack from everyone in Indiana. And now I see people picking them to finish second in the conference.
Yeah. I'm not that high on Indiana. I like them. Don't love them. They're going to be in the tournament. If for some reason they imploded and weren't, it would be brutal. It would be the worst indictment on Crean's tenure there.
Well, he'd be gone, I'd have to assume, if that happened.
You got to assume he'd be gone. Now, he still is owed a whole bunch of money, upward of $5 million at this point. But at that, like, if that happened, I mean, there's just no shot he could return. It would be stunning and purely economical and kind of shocking in its own right if Indiana couldn't rally the money to pay his buyout. But they should be in. They should be really good offensively. Troy Williams, top 25 NBA pick potential. Yogi Ferrell, you know, will be trying to win the player of the year in that league. I would say Indiana's going to be about a 5 or 6 seed. A lot of fun on offense. Let's see him play some defense. I would go Maryland 1. I think I would go Michigan State 2, which is kind of shocking to me because I would have never thought after like they lost to, who was it, UConn 2 years ago at the Garden. I was at the game, and I think it was they lost to UConn at the Garden in the regionals. Knowing what they had on the roster and what was coming in, I wouldn't have thought they would have been in position in 2 years. One, they made the Final Four last year. Insanity. And now Denzel Valentine, who I've long loved. I've long applauded Denzel Valentine and his game. It's very Golden State Warriors-like. And apparently this team can just shoot it, though. They get Aaron Harris eligible, West Virginia transfer. Bryn Forbes is going to light it up. It's going to be a different-looking Michigan State team. You're used to seeing Michigan State with some like big-time dudes crashing the glass, a little bit of ugly ball. They got no problem winning it, 61-57. And not even necessarily in like a Virginia type 61-57, but in that like just Izzo football style. It's not going to be what happens this year. They're going to be bombing shots. This team is going to take more threes in one season than any Izzo team's ever had. I would put them 2. I would put Purdue 3rd, I think, and then Indiana 4. Purdue has some serious size. A.J. Hammond's 7 feet. Isaac Haas is 7'2". Caleb Swanigan is a freshman that's been overrated, but he'll still be good. But let's not expect Caleb Swanigan to come in and average 13-9. That's just not going to happen. He's going to need at least a year to become the dude there, if not 2 years. But Purdue is going to be really solid. I think they're going to have a very, very good year. And, they made the tournament last year. The league sent 7 last year. Wisconsin, Maryland, Iowa, Purdue, Michigan State, Indiana and Ohio State. Yeah, 7 of them made it last year. Ohio State probably won't make it this year, in my opinion.
No tournament for Ohio State.
Nope. D'Angelo Russell was ridiculous for that. He was so without. So Ohio State won 24 games last year. Without D'Angelo Russell, I don't think Ohio State wins 15 games. I really don't. I think he was that important and that critical. I think they'll be just on the outside looking in. Iowa can make it, I think. Michigan will be in the mix again. Caris LeVert returns. Derek Walton should be back from injury and pretty good. And Spike Albrecht, the first half hero of the title game, back in what, 2013? Man, time flies.
Yeah, when he was tweeting with Kate Upton afterwards.
Yeah, right. Oh my God, it's insane, right? Michigan should be in the mix. They should be pretty solid. Rutgers is bad.
Rutgers is
just no good. Penn State is not going to get close. I'm down on Nebraska.
Was Nebraska that year now just looks like a, like I like Tim Miles as much as everybody else does, but that year just looks like total fluke.
We'll see.
We'll talk about Illinois and Northwestern. Actually, real quick about Patino.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about him there.
Like at Minnesota?
It's a tougher job.
I don't think he'll be at Minnesota by 2018, whether by firing or promotion. I just don't think he'll be there. Tough thing is now with side note on the Louisville stuff with Richard Pitino and Rick Pitino. If Richard Pitino had had and still does have a certain amount of success at Minnesota, depending on how this all plays out, he probably can't take over for his dad now that whole hooker stripper party thing that pretty much happened. So that just that in terms of Louisville and that whole thing, and I know we kind of skipped over it when we were talking ACC. That is a completely different scenario that's playing out there, and the major headlines are still going to be coming. And I got to be honest, I'm totally happy we aren't talking about that because I'm talking about it so much on the CBS podcast. Yes. But it is a huge headline and storyline with Louisville, and it will continue to kind of leak on into the season. But I think he'll do okay at Minnesota. I just don't think he's there for the long haul. He basically needs to have back-to-back tournament runs, and I don't think that'll happen this year. Maybe it happens the year after and the year after that, maybe. If that happens, he'll probably be able to get another job because Rick is like crazy powerful and connected in college basketball. So overall, it's fine, but I don't see them as a tournament team this year.
Speaking of which, we're going to get to Illinois in just one more second, but I see a lot of people saying this is the year Northwestern makes the tournament. I don't see it.
No, I don't see it either. I don't listen. It's this weird. I got a sickness about me because for similar reasons that I don't want to see a 16 beat a one, just because it's still that box has not been opened yet.
Right.
I just the sick part of me
you
does
don't
not
want to see it,
see it happen, but I just don't want to see it happen.
Right.
I kind of like that Northwestern hasn't gotten to the tournament.
Hey, me too. I love it. I love it.
It's like this weird, like it's just super weird because they're one of five teams along with St. Francis, New York, who I almost saw do it last year in person.
Yeah, they were that close.
Army, the Citadel, and William & Mary. Those are the five.
William & Mary almost made it a couple years ago.
Bill & Mary has gotten crazy close in recent years, but those are the five teams that were part of the original Division I structure when the NCAA tournament was instituted that have never made it, dating back to the 40s. It's insane. There are only five of them left. There are other programs that haven't made it, but they haven't been around that long. And the fact that Northwestern is in a major conference and has never done this, it is unbelievable. I don't think they're going to get there this year. They'll probably have a decent shot next season because with the, I'm thinking how the league might look next season and what Collins has been able to do on the recruiting trail, they'll kind of be like Ohio State this year in terms of standing. Like, I don't think Ohio State is going to make it, but they will have a shot. And part of that's that because that is that. But yeah, overall, I'm not seeing it. Maybe, you know, they were 15-17 last year. Maybe flip that 17-15 this year, but still need one more year. Also, I've also been on the record, and I when Northwestern does it, by the way, I don't want them in the bubble. I want Northwestern to be like a freaking six seed. I don't even want it to be a question because that fan base, which has suffered forever, they're going to get there eventually, but I want them to blow through it. I want them to hit the 20 win mark by Valentine's Day. So this isn't even on the table personally.
No, I want to see a crying Wilbon and a crying Rovell. I just want them watching and then having Greg Gumbel break their hearts. That's what I want. Speaking of that, let's talk about the reason I might feel that way. Let's talk about Illinois. It does feel, you know, every time John Gross is interviewed, he talks about, like, you know, I've just never really had any injury problems in my career for, like, at Ohio State or at Ohio, anywhere. It was never really a problem for him. And this year, not just injuries to Tracy Abrams. Jalen Coleman-Lance is going to be fine. He played in the exhibition game, and he looks fine. And I think and Aaron Jordan is the guy that looked terrific, actually. They're very excited about him. But – you know, the Brandon Paul thing, I think, is actually what Brandon Paul's the good one. Brandon Paul's the one that didn't cause any trouble. It was
Darius Paul.
It was his brother Darius Paul getting arrested in Europe on the team trip.
Just real as a quick aside, that is, it's one of those things where it's like a minor headline in college basketball, but when you really put it in perspective, like, that is just the worst. You go on this overseas trip, and the whole nature of these things is to go to this cool foreign place, total team bonding, like to get arrested overseas.
He was drunk, like bashing somebody's car. And listen, Darius Paul's had a problem before. Like, this is like a well-known thing among his family. There's certainly not an anger with his release. There's more worry about him with his release. But certainly, yeah, like to have that happen on that trip was bad.
Oh, yeah, no, very – listen, and yeah, it was a rough offseason for Illinois. I actually think – see, some people believe Gross is on the hot seat.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think so. Yeah. I think the injuries and circumstances surrounding this program
–
the athletic director. Now, some people will say that if they get this new AD, and he's not Gross's guy, that could signal even more. I would think the timing of this is not going to indicate it, because when is Illinois now going to have – if you're listening to this, you're unaware, they fired their AD yesterday, the day before we recorded this podcast. So
after firing their football coach the day 2 days before the season started. So lots of chaos going on.
Absolutely. It's kind of been total chaos, and Gross is, you know, stand-up guy for sure. To me, it would take a catastrophic season for Gross not to be there. I think he gets one more year now. Granted, and I think that'll happen. And going into next season, it will be a make the tournament or lose your job. I think that will definitely be the case for Gross a year from now. And I think that's what he will face, because
if they don't make it this year.
I don't think they're going to make it this year. Hold on. So
I like the way
be as objective as you can and try and sell me on why Illinois is going to make the tournament?
Okay. Well, I don't know if they're going to make the tournament, but there is a path for it. I actually kind of like the way that their non-conference schedule sets up, because you've got a bunch of games. You've got a bunch of those weird RPI games that Georgia really benefited from last year, where you play a team. When you play those non-conference games, you're playing teams that are like 95-100 or 85-90 in the RPI, rather than the ones that are 185. They've got North Florida at home. They've got Yale at home. Like they've got these weird RPI booster games, and so those are generally helpful. They're games that, like, if you win, will make your RPI a little higher than it probably should be. If you lose, forget it. Yeah. So that's the thing.
Yeah. So here's the problem. So I don't think that they can win all these games. They can beat Yale at home. That's one of those, like, and that's just a brutal game, because Yale, that'll probably be a decent win, but you're at home, so you should win it. But here's the deal. Like, they go at Providence. You're going to be at that game. I don't think they're – and Providence is probably going to be a bubble team, so they're going to have a loss at Providence.
A road loss. But
it will be a road loss.
But if you can pull off that win, that is a sterling win, particularly for a bubble team.
They get UAB on a neutral floor in Florida, and that is not a guarantee, because UAB – team that beat Iowa State in the tournament last year, bring back a lot of that from that roster. That's one where they might end up losing. I think they do end up losing it. So I actually think that I see what you're saying. They've got some opportunities there. And by the way, opening up against North Florida this Friday, win that game. And like, North Florida, it's not a bad mid-major program, man. Like, that is it's a game Illinois can lose. So you want to dodge those as best you can. If they do get a win at Providence, that would be humongous. They lose that one, but the stability, they beat UAB, they beat Yale, they win the other games that they should. Beat Missouri.
I'll say that there are non-conference games that are not killer losses, but are big wins. It's probably the way I'd put it. Losing at home to Notre Dame is a killer loss. But if you win, that looks great.
Yes.
Losing at Providence is not a killer loss. But if you win, that looks great. Losing to UAB, maybe I'll grant that. But if they can get past that game, they probably got Iowa State in the next game in the tournament. Even if you lose that game, that's not a killer loss.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to me, and if you can go from there 9-9 in the Big Ten and not have any killer losses and pick off one of those wins, and not losing to North Florida or Yale, I think there's a path. I don't know if they're going to do it. They're going to be a lot healthier and later on in the year. None will be back. To me, If Hill makes the leap, Malcolm Hill makes the leap forward that he could, then I think it's there for them.
Yeah, like, Hill is a lot of fun
to watch. He's awesome.
And I think he can have a huge year.
But yes, if they lose to North Florida on Friday, forget everything that everyone said here. And that
which,
is,
by the way, is like that is a possibility.
Half of your people, not you, mind you, but half of your CBS people have picked them to win the Atlantic Sun. You have Florida Gulf Coast.
Yes. It's pretty much between those two teams. So
and NJIT. Palm has NJIT, and bless their heart if NJIT wins that division.
Which would be amazing. finally, they get a conference to themselves. Yes. But, yeah, I don't think Illinois is gonna reach it again. And next year. Well, a year from now, hopefully, we're talking serious consideration for Illinois to not only make the tournament but be a single-digit seed. And, again, a lot of this will be, you know, just as one more side note, like, this is basically the toughest year for Gross to recruit, because, you know, as anyone that's recruiting against him should kind of rightfully do, there's a lot of negative recruiting in terms of what he hasn't been able to do. He could be gone. Look at what Illinois happened inside the department. Look at how they have struggled to kind of have any sort of main success over the, you know, basically since the early days of Weber. There's a lot of things going against him, so it's hard to win the recruiting battles right now. So this is really, like, from a professional standpoint, John Gross has never had it tougher than this past summer leading up through the rest of the season.
Which is why the breakthrough story this year will be that much more satisfying. Okay, now let's do another hour in Illinois. Okay, so real quick, let's look at we got to talk about the ACK. We'll look at the ACK and the A-10. What blows you away about – you talk about those other four conferences that you'd like to put in the top 10. Who are your breakout teams from those conferences?
Okay, so let's go ACK first. I feel like I'm Tina Fey in 30 Rock. ACK. So I think Cincinnati will win the league. SMU has the distinction of not being postseason eligible due to the NCAA. And it tells you all you really need to know. By the Larry Brown got vacated victories. He will have to serve a 9-game suspension, and they can't play in the postseason. And while the victories are being fought, SMU is like, you know what, NCAA, it's cool. We just won't fight the postseason ban, and Larry Brown will sit for 9 games. Kind of speaks to the situation there. I don't need to go into it too much, just there was some academic fraud and a former tutor doing work for Keith Frazier, who is the best player on the roster, or would have been. Nick Moore and Marcus Kennedy have played into a decent role. They're a weird team. I don't know what to expect from SMU, but I got Cincy 1, UConn 2, SMU 3 now. UConn is always interesting because UConn fans know they're almost like the Giants in football, and like sometimes when they're supposed to be good, they're not, and when they're not, they are. But that's the top three. Tulsa should make it. I would say those four will make it. Then you've got Memphis and Temple that are kind of like, I don't know, Memphis.
Real quick, is this it for Pastner?
I don't think it is. I think he's there one more year because I think Memphis will be good enough. And that's also a buyout situation, and I don't think that there will be a job open to him this offseason that he would take, because I do think that he will look at other jobs, and I think he is open to leaving and trying to get a fresh start. I don't think that happens this year. Temple should be pretty solid overall, but mark me down, Cincy to the tournament, UConn to the tournament, Tulsa to the tournament, and I'm going to say Memphis and Temple just missed it. SMU isn't eligible, otherwise they would get 4 in. The Atlantic 10.
I love Dayton. Tell me about Dayton. I was in Buffalo when they won those 2 games. I love the Dayton fan base. They're so awesome. Tell me they're going to be good.
They are going to be good, but I actually think Rhode Island's going to win the league. Rhode Island has 2 really, really good players. EC Matthews will probably be drafted. I think he'll play all 4 years. Hassan Martin is also a junior, has a chance to be drafted. I wrote a feature on him because he is a guy that, because you don't see Rhode Island on your TV, you don't realize how good he is. I wrote that he's the best big man Rhode Island has had since Lamar Odom, and that is, quite frankly, that is true. So I think Rhode Island will win the league. Dayton is probably going to be second. They are in a weird situation right now because they don't have their best player because he was accused of sexual assault. He greatly denies this. He tried to sue the school, Dyshon Pierre, and it didn't work. So he's done for the semester, but he should be eligible at the break in time for the league play. That's a whole ordeal where I feel like, and I'm not totally clued in on all the details with all that stuff, but I feel like there's just stuff there that we don't know about that hasn't gotten out necessarily for good or for bad. But I think Dayton will be the second best team in the conference and they will get a bid. I'll say Davidson is third. They won the league last year. Steph Curry's alma mater is now kind of continuing to ball out. Jack Gibbs will probably make the first team in the A-10. Really, really solid player. BCU, who takes over for Shaka Smart. He's a guy named Will Wade, who was previously at VCU and was on Smart staff, smart guy. I think he will do well at VCU, and I think he'll be a coach there for 10 years. I think he's very well fitted to that system. They still have a lot of good players. Mo Alley Cox is a stud, man. I think he's a really, really valuable piece for that team and will do big things in that league this year. And Jaquan Lewis is a guard, point guard, that I think should have a pretty solid year. I think they'll make the tournament. And then I think George Washington will make the tournament. GW. I think GW has listen, and it's one of those teams where, again, it's, you know, they had that 1 year, what, 2006, man, where they went 16-0 in the league. It was like they had like a super weak strength of schedule, but they ran the table in the league. they're kind of a better program historically than I feel like people give them credit for. And I don't really get why that is, because they're in a major media market in D.C. and all that stuff. But Mike Lonergan, their coach, isn't like, you know, doesn't exactly bounce off the screen. But I think they'll make it. And then I think that's it. You'll have Richmond just miss it. St. Joe's just miss it. St. Joe's has a guy named DeAndre Bembry. It's crazy that, like, sometimes you get these weird, and this is why I love college basketball, is you'll have these teams that might not be tournament good, but they randomly have a guy who's like a first-round NBA pick. And St. Joe's is an example of that this year. DeAndre Bembry is really good, plays really good defense, makes a lot of good decisions, and should be picked in next June's draft, which doesn't have – the A-10 on average has had one NBA pick over, like, the past 12 years. That's why the league doesn't get more respect, is because, one, it doesn't send teams to the Final Four, and two, it does not recruit players that end up leaving early to go to the NBA. So fair or not, that's why, you know, it kind of gets some slack. The rest of the league, you know, is what it is. I won't bore people, but that's the teams you need to know. West Coast Conference, Gonzaga is the best team in the league again. I would, if I had to create a list of my top five favorite players entering the season, I would go Dunn at Providence. I would go Simmons at LSU. I would probably go Hield at Oklahoma. And these are just guys I like to watch. Domas Sabonis at Gonzaga is on the list, is what I'm getting at. He's four and someone else is five. Domantas Sabonis, or Domas Sabonis, is just awesome, man. He's going to be an NBA pick. Him and Karnowski down low, combined with Kyle Wilcher, who's, you know, he can play the three or the four. And some people think Wilcher is going to average 20 points a game. I mean, listen, I was not on board with having Wilcher as our CBS Sports preseason player of the year, but we went with him because given what he produced last year, and trends show that he should be even better this year. Gonzaga is clearly the best team, but BYU will have a shot. And Pepperdine is kind of an, like, somewhat out of left field. Like, you know, when was the last time Pepperdine was any good? They might be good enough because of their age and everyone that they bring back that they steal a bid. We'll see. They're going to have to, in order to do that, they're going to play BYU Gonzaga four times. They're going to need at least two wins. But that's what to keep an eye on in the West Coast Conference. Mountain West, and I think this wraps it up, San Diego State and Boise State are probably the only two teams that you should feel confident about making the tournament. San Diego State gets some tremendous opportunities, by the way. Remember, that team went to Kansas last year and won at Kansas, and now it gets Kansas at its house 3 days before Christmas. Really good opportunity. They play Cal on a neutral court, and actually Monday, November 16th, so just upcoming, they play at Utah. That's a really interesting game. And honestly, San Diego State, Illinois State is one of the best games that opens the season on Friday night. They should be in the tournament. Boise State will be good again. Anthony Drimmick is back. He can ball out. He left the season last year due to injury. I expect him to be pretty good. UNLV is the wild card. They always have talent. This year, listen, they've got a freshman named Steven Zimmerman, who I think will be a two and through kind of player. I don't think he should go one and done, but maybe he does. Who knows? We'll see. Derek Jones is a freshman who can I put out a list of the top 20 dunkers, and he is insane. Like, this dude is crazy how high he can get. Ike Nuamu is a Mercer transfer. UNLV can also dunk. UNLV is going to be a lot of fun to watch, but like last year, are they going to be, you know, a highlight team that just then you look up and it's like, wow, they lost that game 75-67. What happened? They can make the tournament. I'm not sure if they will. Those are the three most relevant and important teams in the Mountain West.
All right, sorry for the rest of college basketball, including Wichita State, for that matter.
Real quick, give me 20 seconds on Wichita State.
20 seconds on Wichita State.
Okay. Fred VanVleet and Ron Baker will compete with each other to make All-American teams. To me, Wichita State is absolutely a valid preseason top 10 kind of team. They've got a Kansas transfer named Connor Frankamp, who will probably have a really good year. That is a very good team, and it should win the Valley with some ease. And in my opinion, with what the schedule, with what it sets up to be, let's say Wichita State in that 4 or 5 seed range. Good again. And I think this is the final year of the Greg Marshall era, as we'll kind of remember it to be, because just because he signed that extension, don't think that doesn't mean that he's never leaving Wichita State again. I'm telling you, if Wichita State has another huge year and another big job opens and that job is going to pay him more than what Wichita State is paying him, he will leave. He was as close as you could possibly be to leaving Wichita State without leaving it for the Alabama job. It was razor thin. So I know that it's possible that he could leave again. I don't root for it, but for those fans wondering, I'm just telling you, if it's another huge year and another big school calls with a boatload of cash, I don't think Wichita State can match it again, and Marshall might take one more job.
All right, so now I apologize for the rest of college basketball for not talking about you, but we really needed that 5 minutes on Illinois. So give me your Final Four.
Okay, my Final Four, which I'm telling you now, it's not live on CBS Sports as of this podcast.
Oh, it's exclusive.
It's exclusive. This is going to be, because I know the podcast goes live pretty soon after we record it, so this will be exclusive to the Willich Experience for a good 12 to 16 hours. I will go with Villanova, Virginia, Kansas, and Maryland.
By the way, according to your guy Parrish,
yeah,
Mark Turgeon told him that Wiley is out for the season.
Okay, I don't have my Twitter feed up in front of me, so there we go. Wiley out for the season. I'm still going to say Maryland, because it's so funny because we talk about these teams and we talk about them in the greater picture of a season long thing. It's much more, I think, analytically and from an evaluation point a standpoint, fair to project win totals and NCAA tournament seeds than it is to see how they will do in the tournament, because it is such a beast and teams can lose a game and clearly be the better team. And so when you're projecting out a Final Four, obviously it's about matchups and if you catch a team on the wrong day, all that stuff. So having said that, Villanova, Virginia, Maryland, Kansas. What about you?
Oh, me, Illinois, Georgia, Eastern Illinois. I mean, come on, man. This feels like a North Carolina wins the championship and ruins everything.
Wow.
Going into all the madness of their season. The point that, like, it's going to be February, North Carolina's going to be number one and the favorite, and everyone's going to start looking at the NCAA being like, hey, so how much time are you taking with this thing? And it becomes this big national story. That's what I think is going to happen.
How about that? Okay, I have Kansas winning it all. I think Cheick Diallo gets eligible, and with everything that they have, with how good Bill Self is, it's funny because when you mention it, it's like, and he only has the one title, and as you're saying that, I'm thinking, yeah, and that's not right. He should absolutely have more than one, and he's too good to only have one, in my opinion. I think he is an all-time coach, and there are only a few exceptions, you know, Boeheim being one of them, where a guy who's like an all-timer kind of coach only gets one. Right. So Self is going to get a second at some point. I think this is it.
All right. As always, this has been a blast. We could go for three more hours.
I know. I tend to ramble. I appreciate you having me on. Everyone that like listens to this, I seriously appreciate it. I get so pumped for the season, man. It's such a long off season, and I love all these other sports, but nothing to me compares to college hoops. And it just feels good that it's finally starting this weekend, and then, you know, the marathon on Tuesday, like, it's just, finally, it's here. Thank God.
I could not agree more. So, everyone, please follow Matt Norlander. I'm sure you do already if you're listening to this podcast. But Matt Norlander, MattNorlander. Matt, well, let's do this again to preview the tournament. What do you say?
You got it, Will. Thank you so much, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Of course. Thanks for coming on. Now, this is the Willich Experience Podcast. Music is by the Sun Dogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. This is always one of my favorite podcasts everywhere. One of my favorite podcasts I do every year. So send it around to everyone, because this is what college basketball is all about. Friday, it's fun. Matt, see ya. See everyone. Bye. I feel like I'm the guy at the end of the Saturday Night Live credits. Like, I'm hugging everyone. Hey, everybody. See you later. Hey, thanks. See ya. Hey, Trump. Look, it's Larry David looking sad.
Don't. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Be safe, everyone. Thanks, Matt. We'll talk to y'all later.